Welcome back, everyone, to Squawk 1200. I'm Zach.
I'm Wireless Mike.
And we are joined today with a fantastic guest. Our next guest, he spent 16 years as an air traffic controller at Washington Dulles, served 3 years as the executive VP of NATCA, the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, and was then elected NATCA's president in 2009. In July of 2018, he was reelected to an unprecedented fourth term in that position. I'm, of course, referring to Mr. Paul Rinaldi. Paul, thanks for joining us here on Squawk 1200.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you with us. We wanted to talk about government shutdowns and their effect on aviation. And one of the things I know you've advocated for at your time with NACA is a stable funding stream for the aviation side of the federal government, especially the FAA. There's a bill working its way through Congress now. Tell us how that's going and what it means for the people of the FAA.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the government shutdown in January, we call it the year of January. It was a very long, tumultuous time. When the government was shut down, our controllers did an amazing job of every day making sure that the flying public was safe, you know, and not being distracted. But after, as you're approaching the second paycheck of zero mortgage due, extending your credit cards beyond anybody being comfortable at this point, it really started to. There was a drift. It was actually drifting into the operation, the distractions. And we saw it, and the agency saw it, and we were actually at the point where we thought we were going to have to pull the system down a little bit to give it some relief. We were very concerned. You know, government shutdowns should never happen, but more importantly, we have experienced a number of government shutdowns that have really nothing to do with aviation. All important issues, gun control, Planned Parenthood, Affordable Care Act. I mean, I can rattle them all off why we were shut down, but not germane to running a safe, efficient, modern aviation system. And that's what we should be focused on, and that's what the FAA should be focused on. So there is a bill that is introduced by Chairman DeFazio and Chairman Lawson that has come out of committee, and there is bipartisan support, over 240 co-sponsors in the House. It's called H.R. 1108. And what it basically does is everybody pays into the aviation trust fund that uses it, whether I buy a commercial ticket and those taxes go into the aviation trust fund, or whether I fly my Cessna 172 and I put gas in there, I'm paying a tax that goes into that aviation trust fund. That money should go back to aviation so that we can enhance and modernize aviation. And historically, they run about a $6 billion to $7 billion uncommitted balance in that trust fund. What we're asking in this bill is, in the event of a lapse of appropriations and the government would shut down, the FAA would not shut down. We would be business as usual because we would tap into the uncommitted balance of the aviation trust fund, and it would just run aviation as normal. Now, $7-8 billion would probably keep us running for about 7 months, business as normal. Hopefully the government would be shut down. We do have some opponents to this. It seems like a no-brainer, right? There's a companion bill in the Senate. It's also bipartisan. It's S-762. And you'd think this would be a no-brainer, but apparently aviation is a pointy end of a spear to end the government shutdown. And those that want to use us as leverage want to keep us in the mix of a government shutdown.
Well, you guys actually, I think, can take credit for ending the shutdown, as I understand it. You know, when some of the controllers were actually calling in sick and stuff, and that finally ended it. So, that's fantastic. But we want representatives to run the government, to actually run the government.
Yeah, and we want everyone to do their job. We want the government to, we want them to work their issues out, but not put us in the middle of this political tug of war. There was a lot of things that contributed to the end of the government shutdown. Obviously, yes, aviation delays and concerns about aviation delays and safety, as our safety nets weren't up and running for 35 days, was a deep concern of ours, and we were really getting concerned. The fact that the Coast Guard Commandant came out and said this is unacceptable, that our people are on food lines and they need to be protecting our coast. The FBI said that some of the material that they need in investigations might not exist because they don't have the staff to protect that information and that evidence. All of that played into a role of, and it showed exactly why government shutdowns are dumb, right? And, you know, they're just dumb. You're paying everybody their salary to stay home. Well, let them go to work, and you resolve your issues the way you're going to resolve your
right.
issues.
And now, what other things? I know there's a huge personal effect on the people not getting a paycheck, and that's we all know about that. What are some of the behind-the-scenes things that don't get done, end up costing the taxpayers more money in the long run?
Well, I would say, government shutdowns, it's not even, 2-for-1 or 3-for-1. It's probably about a 10-for-1 cost to the taxpayer. Because what happens is our programs that we're trying to modernize the system on get delayed, like Datacom. We've been working on Datacom for years. We had to pull that down. The double and triple training we need to do for controllers right now on that. And we have a lot of programs and training we need to do. So it just slides the calendar so far down the road that we wind up spending probably 10 times more than we normally would because of a government shutdown. It is not the best way to run a business by any stretch of imagination.
So I understand there's a huge shortage in controllers, and there's a backlog in training. And as I understand, all that was shut down during the shutdown also, correct?
Absolutely. They sent 400-plus controllers or entry level that were at the academy, weren't certified through the academy, they sent them home, and they were halfway through the class or maybe full through the class. They were in different stages of training. They went home for 35 days and actually took a little longer to get the academy up and running. So it was probably in the middle of February when we got up and running. We brought them back, but you had to start them at a stage to give them enough refresher to get them back up and going. So that was the huge waste of money also. You're doing double and triple training out there. We're going to miss our hiring goal because obviously the academy was shut down.
So you still haven't recovered from the shutdown and all the things?
No, and actually it's going to be years before we recover from a 35-day shutdown. That was a massive shutdown and something we shouldn't experience. Our biggest concern now as we look forward, October 1. They seem like they're getting along. They seem like they have a budget deal. They seem like they have a cap solution for government spending, and they also seem like they have, a debt solution also. On the table. The question is, can they get it done in time, or are they going to wait to the 11th hour one more time?
Now, if your House Resolution 1108 is passed, would that take it away? So if they don't figure this stuff out by October, you would then not have to worry about that. You could still
So if it passed through the House and the Senate and the President signed it, we would just continue business as usual, as if it was just a normal Monday. We would go to work. And continue to focus on the safety of the mission, modernizing the system, hiring, training controllers to keep the system up and running. We would be able to do all of that without an interruption or a lapse in funds. What happens about 2 weeks before the government is planned to shut down or they're uncertain if it's going to shut down, we start exchanging lists with the agency of who's accepted, non-accepted. And that's a very fluid list because if I take something as strong as NyQuil, I am now medically DQ'd for 48 hours. So now I'm no longer accepted to go to work. I'm now furloughed. And now 48 hours from there, if I'm off of NyQuil, then I'm ready to go back to work, then I'm accepted. So we exchange lists for 10 days going back and forth. And then at the 11th hour, if Congress goes, okay, well, we're going to kick the can 5 days down the road so we can work this deal out. But we're back to exchanging lists, and we're not hiring, we're not training, we're not focused on modernization. We're just exchanging lists of who's going to come to work and who's not under the Anti-Deficiency Act. It's an awful waste of resources, money, and talent.
We're speaking with Paul Rinaldi, president of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. To piggyback on that, what you said, wasting talent, wasting time. I left the agency in 2016, and at that time, staffing was becoming a problem, and it was starting to wear on them. What's your sense now of the morale in the controller workforce, especially in terms of having to do, double and triple training, as you mentioned, all of that that's weighing on them?
Well, we have a lot of facilities that are working the maximum, 6-day work weeks, 10-hour days. And they've been doing it for years, and they're getting tired. Fatigue is into our system. So we do have a number of developmentals into the system. We have to focus on training them. You don't come out of the academy, and then all of a sudden, you're a certified air traffic controller. As you start off at lower-level facilities in the terminal world and the tower world, and you move up. You train, you hone, you develop your skills, and then you get to move up to, a Chicago O'Hare, or JFK, or But that takes years. It takes 3 to 5 years to get someone fully certified in our in-route environment. And there is technology out there that we could start to deploy that would streamline that and maybe take the 3 to 5 years and bring it back down to 2 to 4 years or possibly even less than that. So we have to continue to hire. We have to continue to focus on the training. And we have to continue to modernize and enhance the safety of the system. And we have to focus on making sure we have a stable, predictable funding stream.
So how can our listeners help to support H.R. 1108 and get that passed?
Well, the best thing they could do is write an email or a phone call to their legislator, their congressman or woman, or their senator, and say, we support H.R. 1108. We support S-762. We don't want to see the aviation system have any interruption in lapse of appropriations. We want them to continue to run a safe, efficient system. We run the safest system in the world. We want to keep focusing on that.
And do you have any tools on your website that help explain H.R. 1108?
Absolutely. If you go to NACA, N-A-T-C-A, .org, you can find all the information you need to on our legislative agendas and what we're asking our membership to do, and also the flying public to help us.
Outstanding. Paul Rinaldi of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, thank you so much for being here
truly
with us on EA Radio.
Truly a pleasure. Thank you.
Stay tuned, everybody. On the Fly is going to be live at the Vintage Aircraft section. They're coming up next here on EA Radio. Stay tuned, 1210 AM, 96.5 FM, and streaming online at eaaradio.net.